and NPR.
From Radio Catskills Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. What we're going to be talking about is the fact that it was a big day in Albany. Governor Hochul followed up on last week's State of the State address with some details and some numbers, including one very big number we're going to get to in just a moment. She rolled out the 2026 executive budget. That's her office's proposal for what the budget should be in New York. It'll ultimately need to be reconciled with the legislature's budgets. But what was in the State of the State address and this proposed budget when it comes to New York's climate change goals? And what wasn't in there? The best person to ask about that is Colin Kinneborough of New York Focus. He reports on climate environmental politics, and we're going to have a big conversation with him coming right up. But first, on this latest news from Albany, and this very big number with a dollar sign, $252 billion. That's the price tag on this year's budget for New York, up about 4% compared to last year. But if there's one thing Governor Kathy Hochul wants you to know, it's that she thinks the state is in pretty good shape. Jun Yun Hong from New York Public News Network has a report.
The governor says New York has seen a better-than-expected economy. That, coupled with strong performance from Wall Street, means there's a surplus of over $5 billion.
We're investing more in New Yorkers because we have more resources to do so, and we're doing it responsibly.
She wants to put those extra resources in people's pockets through rebate checks, income tax cuts, and an expanded child tax credit. And she's lowering the tax rate for qualifying New Yorkers by 0.2%.
This puts nearly $5,000 back in the pockets of many New York families.
All these proposals, plus an extended tax hike on the wealthy, are Hochul's way of shoring up her standing with voters as she's looking towards her 2026 reelection campaign with mediocre approval ratings. There are other flashy and new proposals Hochul is putting on the table. She's vowed to fund free breakfast and lunch for all students in public schools, but chief among them is restricting cell phones at schools.
By the start of the next school year, every student will be required to disconnect from their devices during the school hours, bell to bell.
Hochul put the price tag on the cell phone restriction, with some exceptions, at nearly $14 million. That's at least $10 per student.
That means during class, at lunch, in the hallways, our kids will finally be freed from the endless disruptions of social media and all the mental health pressures that come from it.
School funding more broadly was a large source of the increase in the state's budget. Hochul initially wanted to cut funding to schools with dwindling enrollment, but now she's pushing for bumps in funding across the board, plus even more financial support for schools in districts that have higher poverty rates. Medicaid spending is also up, this time 14% compared to last year. The governor's hoping to offset those costs through a program which provides home care. She also wants hospitals that are financially strained to partner with stronger institutions. But with President Donald Trump back in the White House and Republicans controlling Congress, Hochul acknowledged federal funding for healthcare and education could be at risk.
Those who are hurt need to raise their voices and direct that anger at Washington and push their members of Congress to fight for them.
Ed Raw is a state lawmaker from Long Island. He says while it's great that the state has a surplus, he's worried that the growing budget might catch up with the state down the line.
My fear is what happens when the bottom drops out and we suddenly say, oh, maybe we can't afford the child care tax credit. Maybe we have to go increase some other tax rates.
Andrew Ryan is president of the Citizens Budget Commission, that's a fiscal watchdog. He says that the current budget has too many new proposals without much to curb spending.
The reality is we can't afford all these programs in the long run if we aren't willing to restrain spending, and there is no spending restraint in this budget.
Ryan also says it would have been better for the governor to invest in longer-term projects instead of rebate checks.
The rebate checks basically takes $3 billion and spreads it so thinly it won't help anybody.
Hochul will spend the next several months negotiating with the Democratic-controlled legislature about her proposals. The deadline to approve the final version of the budget is March 31st, but Hochul's administration is known to have prolonged negotiations over the budget, and it could happen this year, too. In Albany, I'm Jung Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
Thank you, Jung Yoon Han, for that report. Let's continue following up on this news now by turning to New York Focus, the independent newsroom doing in-depth reporting on how the state really works. Colin Kinneborough covers climate and environmental politics for New York Focus, and we regularly check in with him for an update on where the state is with its lofty climate change goals. We've been talking about it a lot in recent years. He's got reporting on what Governor Kathy Hochul did and did not say about climate change in her State of the State address. And he was also watching today's rollout of the governor's proposed 2026 executive budget. I spoke to him earlier this afternoon. Colin, welcome back to the Local Edition.
Hi, Jason. Great to be here.
So, I want to talk about the reporting you've been doing the last couple of weeks, but I do want to start off with just the news of the day today, because it was this afternoon that the governor, basically rolled out her proposal for New York budget. It's the 2026 executive budget today. Can you tell me about, what you were watching, what you're seeing, and what you learned?
Sure, absolutely. Yes. Big day for policy in New York when the governor rolls out her budget proposal for the year. As always, I was looking at it for climate items, although we sort of had an idea of what to expect from the governor's State of the State. True to that speech, there is a $1 billion pot of funding for climate initiatives in this year's budget. That's sort of a first, that there's a fresh pot of money dedicated to climate in the budget. That's been something that's been a longstanding, in a way, it's something that people have wanted for a lot of climate groups have wanted for a long time, is dedicated funding. And this year, Hochul is putting it in. At the same time, it's not the form of funding that a lot of people were expecting and hoping for, in kind of climate world, which was a bigger multi-year policy known as Cap and Invest. So that is indeed not in the budget, which that's a policy that would charge polluters essentially to fund the state's transition towards green energy and to limit greenhouse gas emissions overall. That is not in the budget. So, so far, the few reactions that I've seen have actually been disappointment at the budget and this sort of backtracking. But we can get into all the details there.
Yeah, well, I just want to clarify one thing that you said there, which is, I mean, you and I have been talking about this for, I don't know, a year, almost 2 years, following New York's lofty climate change goals and their progress towards that. And in all that time, it didn't occur to me that there wasn't money being set aside specifically for this in New York's budget. This whole time there hasn't been anything earmarked in that way?
Well, it's not that there's no money for climate initiatives in the budget. There have been, there are little pots of climate funding here and there. There's also the Environmental Bond Act, which was passed a few years ago, which is somewhat outside the budget, although I think it kind of gets portions of it get allocated through the budget every year, which that sets aside that was $4.2 billion over several years. And a portion of that goes towards climate things. But there has not been a single dedicated kind of clearinghouse like, here's all the money we're spending on climate. No kind of big round number to point to say this year we're spending this amount of money on climate and here's where it's going. No, that hasn't been there.
Wow. Okay. So in that sense, this sounds like progress. But as you've already said, people who are watching environmental issues in the state are a bit disappointed. And also, it sounds like you're saying that you're not really surprised at that disappointment, especially because, we got the State of the State address last week. Now, I was saying the whole time, I said, State of the State is essentially the kickoff of the budgeting season in New York, and so much of New York's legislative year gets tied up with the budgeting process. And I kind of say unofficial because there's not a lot of substance in the state of the state. It's kind of a broad vision. And then here we are, you know, a week or so later, we get the details of the governor's proposed budget, which will have to be reconciled with proposed budgets from the legislature. But as you're saying here, you know, what she laid out in the state of the state sounds like that's what you're seeing on paper in the details today.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, I just want to take a little bit of a step back. I mean, as far as, you know, people's expectations on where things might go on climate in the governor's agenda this year and where things have actually gone. As I reported on towards the end of last year and a couple weeks ago, early this year, you know, there was a lot of talk that the governor would move ahead with this program she's been talking about for now the past 2 years, which is known as Cap and Invest, again, essentially charging polluters to help fund the green transition. And there had been a lot of talk towards the end of last year that the governor's team and, you know, people from the agencies were going around to different climate groups and laying out some of the details that they were planning to move ahead with, you know, as part of her agenda this year. And that's some of what I reported on leading up to the state of the state. And then in that speech, not only did she not mention this policy in the speech, you know, that in itself may not be surprising, but in the sort of policy agenda book that gets sent out along with the speech, there was hardly any detail on Cap and Invest. And what little detail there was suggested that the program was getting shelved, basically, that they're, you know, they weren't moving ahead in the immediate future, and there was no clear indication of when they would move ahead, which, yeah, led a lot of people to wonder whether this is her basically just putting the brakes on it, period. You know, the governor's always had a lot, you know, raised questions about it, whether it would hurt affordability, you know, drive up the cost of living for New Yorkers. And, you know, a lot of people read this as kind of those doubts winning the day and her walking back on what was expected to be her signature climate funding policy this year. So that much did come through in the state of the state, and then, you know, seems to be validated in the budget. There was no sort of meat on the bone to kind of expand the Cap and Invest policy. There was one, what seems to me like a fairly very small bureaucratic thing about data sharing between different agencies that could potentially help the program, but I don't think that's, you know, in terms of the substance, there's nothing major to advance the program here. So that's what's going on with Cap and Invest.
Just a little more detail on Cap and Invest. I mean, in the politics of it in the state, who was looking for this? Who's in support of this? And who's in opposition to a plan like this?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because, you know, Cap and Invest, it's got sort of a newish name, but it's a version of cap and trade, which is a kind of climate policy that's been around for a long time. You know, Europe has had a version since, I think, 2005. California has had a version since 2013. And it's always kind of had a mixed reaction, even from, you know, climate people. I would say there are a lot of people in sort of the environmental justice side of the movement who are actually quite skeptical. For a long time, you know, worried that actually it was letting certain polluters kind of pay their way out of, you know, reducing their emissions, and you know, further burdening people in disadvantaged communities. Anyway, there have been lots of criticisms over the years, even within the climate movement. But in New York, it actually seemed like pretty much the entire climate movement was kind of coming together, was kind of coalescing to say, okay, listen, we need this. Even if it's imperfect, we need this as a kind of way to backstop our, you know, our climate programs, and move towards these big targets we have in the law of cutting our emissions, to essentially zero by 2050, right? So by the beginning of, you know, this year, we pretty much had a broad spectrum of the climate movement behind this. Opposed, I would say, you know, the business lobby writ large. I mean, There was one a group called Upstate United that I was in touch with recently. The business council in the state has raised a lot of questions about it. You have the broad pro-business Citizens Budget Commission, which also raised a lot of questions about how the program was, going to move ahead, even though they say they support it in principle. So I would say that there was broad business skepticism. And then, certainly among some of the fossil fuel interests specifically, I think some of the, what you could consider the usual suspects, like some of the gas utilities, have been more focused, I think, on opposing policies like phasing out the use of gas for home heating. That's been, I think, their bigger concern. But certainly there's been opposition over the years from, heating oil industry, just general fossil fuel interests, the ones who would be most likely to, face that fee through the program, who would be the ones paying that fee up front to continue to be able to sell their products, those are the ones who are most opposed to it.
And just to stay on this for a moment, but also complicate things by bringing up other issues, it sounds like this is another program by which, the invest part of this, that fees being imposed would help fund some climate change initiatives, as well as stymieing the amount of greenhouse gases are produced, which in that sense reminds me a lot about congestion pricing, at least in, outside structure of it. So how does what's happening here with Cap and Invest compare to what happened that we all watched with congestion pricing?
I think there's a lot of overlap. I think when the governor first suspended congestion pricing, a lot of people in climate world, who are mad about that policy as well, they also started to wonder whether she might make a similar move with Cap and Invest. And it actually kind of seems like that's what's playing out right now. I think there are a lot of parallels. I think there, the governor has framed this in terms of a concern about affordability, that it would, drive up costs in the short term. Of course, at the same time, you have the people at her agencies who are crafting the policy, who have been sending out, giving presentations showing how a lot of people would actually be better off in the short and medium term, both from there's a rebate component. They were going to hand out, rebates for a portion of the with a portion of the revenue directly to New Yorkers, and then also investments. So investing in things like, heat pumps to make your home more energy efficient, that sort of thing, and that with the idea that people would also reap savings from that over time. So I think the actual math on the affordability was complicated, but it seems like the governor's main concern about it is that, a lot of middle income people might be feeling some increase in the short term, and maybe that was something that she felt she couldn't reconcile with her, affordability agenda, which is, the watchword this year.
We're talking with Colin Kinnebrough of New York Focus. We're going to take a quick break. More with Colin when we come back. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Well, it's an aggressive speech, right? And it presages an aggressive term. And he's not going to let, mealy-mouth establishment Republicans or military officers, any of these lawyers or any of these other people tell him no. He's not going to let them tell him, sorry, that's illegal. Sorry, that's unconstitutional. Sorry, that's unwise. No way he's going to listen to that anymore.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
This is Kusar Grace, KG, right here in the place to be, WJFF Radio Catskills Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9. 2 hours of great music, jazz, funk, blues. I got mellow grooves to help you unwind, exciting rhythms to help you cut loose. Join me Tuesday night for the Music Emporium, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and I'm talking to Colin Kinnebrough who covers climate and environmental politics for New York Focus. We've been talking about where things stand with New York's climate change goals, especially in light of Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address last week and today's rollout of her proposed executive budget for 2026. You also put out an article about the State of the State saying, you know, there's some bait and switch on climate. Is that primarily about this cap and invest issue, or were you seeing other inconsistencies in the State of the State on climate?
No, that's pretty much it. The bait and switch was what I referred to earlier, where a lot of the climate groups felt like they were being teed up to help support a cap and invest rollout at the beginning of this year. And then, you know, they felt like they got blindsided because they heard the State of the State address and they got the briefing book, and they were as surprised as any of us on the outside that, you know, this policy was essentially getting slow rolled rather than moving ahead as they'd come to expect.
You also reported that the climate deadline was removed from the State of the State agenda at the last minute. Now, is that the speech, or is that just the policy book that goes with the speech? Tell us about what you discovered there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a little bit of a side note to the bigger, backtracking, arguably, that I've been covering here. But it does refer to the briefing book. Basically, you know, every year there's a version of that gets sent to reporters ahead of time, just a few hours before the speech. And then there's a final version that they publish online for the public to read. And I noticed that there was actually a slight difference in the text, specifically in this section around cap and invest, between those two versions. In the first version, there was at least one kind of deadline. When I said earlier there was very little concrete detail on cap and invest, but in the version sent to reporters ahead of time, there was a sort of self-imposed deadline saying we're going to put out a draft of the rules for the one portion of this program, sort of baseline rules to inform how the program moves ahead. We're going to put those out by the end of this year. So there was one concrete commitment in there. A few hours later, in the version that got posted publicly, that deadline had actually disappeared. So all we were left with was language saying, you know, that in the coming months, the agencies would move ahead with this program. But it was much more vague. So, you know, it's ambiguous. It could be read either way. Maybe they'll move ahead in the next few months and, you know, rev things up from there. But at least one Albany veteran I spoke with seemed to think that was unlikely, and more likely it meant, you know, this is just a way of getting out of any commitment to advancing the program on any fixed deadline.
Now, can you put this in the context, or I guess what I'm saying is, can you remind people about what we've talked about before, which, just again, remind folks about these goals and the timeline and how time seems to be running short on a lot of New York climate goals?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, now more than 5 years ago in 2019, the state under the first Trump administration, I should remind people, the state passed what is, you know, now its core climate law, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which set a whole range of targets. Again, these are baked into law, so they're not just goals, they're mandates that the state is supposed to meet, including reducing emissions, overall greenhouse emissions 40% by 2030. Also by 2030, getting the grid over to 70% renewable energy. We're behind on that. And a whole lot more sort of interim targets leading to this bigger target of essentially, you know, zeroing out emissions by 2050, something that corresponds to, you know, meeting the state's commitment under the Paris Climate Accord, essentially. So that's the big picture. Again, there has never really been funding, like a comprehensive source of funding to meet those goals. There's been, you know, a lot of falling behind on those goals, as I've reported on before. And one thing I just wanted to mention in terms of the funding equation, it's not that we're not paying for renewable energy or, you know, climate initiatives in any way at the moment. It's just that most of that is going through people's utility bills in ways that are sort of, you know, indirect, and they don't really notice. But we are paying for this transition, for this energy transition, even in a delayed way. We're paying for the stuff that we're working on now. It's just sort of, you know, hidden in people's utility bills. And part of the idea with coming up with a dedicated program like Cap and Invest is like, let's make this more legible and transparent and centralized. So that is part of what's not happening. And it seems like we're going to, you know, keep moving ahead with the status quo, plus this extra $1 billion that the governor is putting into the budget this year.
Is that kind of approach enough to meet these goals?
You know, I don't know if I'm the best position to say for sure, but from all of my reporting to date, it does seem unlikely. I mean, there's just a tremendous amount of catch up we have to do if we want to get anywhere close to meeting those goals. Part of the idea with a Cap and Invest program, though there are caveats to this, but at least in principle, you know, the idea of a cap on greenhouse gas emissions is built into that. So that also was supposed to help, you know, give some clarity and structure in actually advancing towards those goals and measuring how far we were getting. I think it's going to be very, very challenging for the state to catch up on meeting those targets without, you know, a major program like this. But, you know, maybe the governor will prove me wrong.
As you wait to see what happens here, and given everything that you just explained to us, what are you going to be watching for in the coming year? Again, understanding that a lot of legislation in New York gets tied up in the budgeting process, and you've already seen some clear indicators of how that's going to go. But, I mean, what else are you going to be watching for this year?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't think we've heard the last word on Cap and Invest necessarily. You know, there have been some rumblings of potentially litigation over this. Again, as I mentioned, those climate law targets are legal mandates, so there's a chance that some of the environmental groups could come out and sue the state for, you know, falling behind on the targets, as similar to lawsuits over congestion pricing. I have no idea if that's going to come to bear, but there have definitely been some rumblings along those lines, so that'll be interesting to watch. One other big thing tied to some other recent news is offshore wind. Trump did move ahead yesterday, as promised, with an executive order on day one that's supposed to suspend permits for any new offshore wind projects. That could have major impacts on New York's ability to meet its goals. I wrote about that a couple months ago and definitely plan to report more on that. So yeah, that's, you know, the fallout from federal decisions on energy policy, that's going to be big for New York as well. So yeah, those are a couple of the key areas I'm watching. I mean, you know, continue to see whether with, you know, onshore renewables, the state is able to, you know, continue getting out of the sort of supply chain and inflation rut it was in after the pandemic and actually build more renewables. But yeah, there's no shortage of things to be watching. But big picture, those are a few of the ones that come to mind.
All right. Well, Colin, I'll remind folks that your work is up now at nysfocus.com. And thank you so much for going over this with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Jason.
Well, that's it for the Local Edition. I've been your host, Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. I'll be back again tomorrow night. We'll do it again. We'll check in with Ruby Rayner of the River Reporter for the latest local news. Before that, you get more local news and conversations. 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, join Tim Bruno for Radio Chatskill for the latest. Oh, but before we go, I almost forgot to mention this. I got to let you know that some schools in our listening area will be on a two-hour delay tomorrow morning due to the extreme cold weather. And two of them have already let us know those plans. They let us know earlier this afternoon. That's Liberty Central School District on a two-hour delay tomorrow, and Fallsburg Central School District also on a two-hour delay. And in Fallsburg, there will be no morning kids club, and students should check with the school about the scheduling of Regents exams around this delay. More schools may join those too, so you want to be listening to Radio Catskill tomorrow morning for the latest updates. Stay with us. Coming up at 7, it's Mr. Kusar Grace and the Music Emporium. But before that, up next, it's The Daily. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Women's Health Center, a Wayne Memorial Community Health Center, physicians and certified midwives who deliver, with offices in Honesdale, Hamlin, Carbondale, and Dingman's Ferry in Pennsylvania. More information at WMCHC.net. And from the River Reporter newspaper, riverreporter.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.